By October 20, 1517, he had arrived in Seville, the largest city in Andalusia, in southwestern Spain. Rui Falero joined him there in December. Within days of his arrival, Magellan signed documents formally making him a subject of Castile and its young king, Charles I. No longer was he Fernão de Magalhães. In Spain, he became known as Hernando de Magallanes. There was ample precedent for Magellan's emigration to Spain. His boyhood hero, Christopher Columbus, had come to Spain from Genoa to seek backing for the discovery of a route to the Indies. Magellan believed that he could do what the Genoese navigator had claimed to do, but had never actually accomplished, reach the fabulous Indies by sailing westward across the ocean. Tensions ran so high between Spain and Portugal that an international incident could result from an expedition following this route. Portugal had long been notoriously secretive about its empire, almost as secretive as the Arabs had been. By an edict of the Portuguese king, announced on November 13, 1504, anyone revealing discoveries or plans for missions of exploration could be executed. Magellan brought with him many of Portugal's most precious and sensitive secrets. Information about secret expeditions, a familiarity with Portuguese activity in the Indies, and an acquaintance with Portuguese navigational knowledge of the world beyond Europe. He was a rare breed, an explorer, schooled in the royal tradition established by Prince Henry the Navigator, but he needed a sponsor. At 18, Charles I, King of Castile, Aragon, and León, was keenly aware of his august antecedents. He had preceded Magellan to Spain by only a year and was as much of a stranger or more. A Habsburg, he had come of age in Flanders, drinking beer and speaking Flemish. He was now trying to learn the Spanish language and Spanish customs as quickly as he could. His thirst for fame and glory had become apparent as soon as he arrived in Spain, and it was encouraged by his advisors, most of them highly placed officials of the church who had been in power since the days of Ferdinand and Isabella. Less than a year after coming to Spain, Charles was elected King of the Romans, thanks to a great deal of string-pulling by members of his family. The appointment meant that he would eventually become crowned King Charles V, Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. But to receive the title, he would have to pay vast sums of money, essentially bribes, to the electors, and he looked to the Indies and the New World as a source of revenue to advance his personal ambitions. The timing of Magellan's arrival in Spain was auspicious, but his overall prospects were decidedly mixed. He was an unknown quantity to the Spanish court and ministers. He spoke Spanish haltingly, and he relied on scribes for written communication in that language. He had renounced his loyalty to Portugal, but he remained an outsider in Spain, on probation and under suspicion. In these difficult circumstances, getting the financial backing for his proposed voyage would require a superhuman expenditure of effort and cunning, as well as a generous amount of luck. Spain, in this era, remained a feudal society ruled by a powerful, feared, and corrupt clergy. Bishops' illegitimate children, often referred to as nephews or nieces, played prominent roles in public life. Cruelty, hypocrisy, and tyranny imbued the social order in which Magellan now found himself. But for the moment, he prospered by appealing to the Spanish court's longing to dominate world trade. Soon after arriving in Seville, Magellan became acquainted with Diogo Barbosa, another Portuguese expatriate who had settled in this city 14 years earlier and was now Knight Commander of the Order of Santiago, among his other distinctions. Diogo's nephew, Duarte, had sailed for Portugal, and Magellan was probably influenced by Duarte's accounts of his journey. At the same time, Magellan began to woo Diogo's daughter, Beatrice. They married before the year was out. Suddenly, Magellan had an important sponsor in Seville, as well as a financial stake, because Beatrice brought with her a dowry of 600,000 maravedi. A child named Rodrigo was born the following year. Guided by the Barbosa family, Ferdinand Magellan prepared to persuade the powerful Casa de Contratación, or House of Commerce, to allow him to undertake his audacious voyage. The Casa administered all aspects of exploration, including registering cargoes and proclaiming rules for the outfitting of ships and their weapons. They also functioned as a maritime court, adjudicating contract disputes and insurance claims for all voyages to the New World. The Casa de Contratación was controlled by one man, who was neither a navigator nor an explorer. Juan Rodriguez de Fonseca, the Bishop of Burgos, had served as Queen Isabella's chaplain and had managed Columbus's expeditions even before the Casa came into existence. A cold, manipulative bureaucrat who jealously guarded his power, Fonseca made himself essential to all Spanish expeditions to the New World. Anyone wishing Spain's backing would have to obtain Fonseca's blessing, which, as legions of explorers would testify, was also a curse. By the time Magellan appeared on the scene, the balance of power over trading privileges had shifted decisively from the explorer to the crown. Magellan and others in his position would have to settle for what the crown granted them, still a fortune beyond imagining, rather than establishing their own foreign trading empires. There could be no expedition to the Spice Islands without the backing of Fonseca and his Casa de Contratación. When Magellan approached representatives of the Casa and declared that he believed that the Spice Islands were located within the Spanish hemisphere, he was telling them exactly what they wanted, indeed needed, to hear. Still, the provisions of the Treaty of Tordesillas posed serious obstacles for the proposed expedition. Members of the Casa failed to see how Magellan could avoid trespassing on Portuguese interests by sailing west until he reached the east. Anticipating this objection, Magellan referred to a clause in the Treaty of Tordesillas that allowed Spain or Portugal the freedom of the seas to reach lands belonging to one empire or the other. Such a clause was open to many interpretations. Then there was the question of Magellan's nationality. The prospect of a Portuguese leading a Spanish expedition through Portuguese waters made nearly everyone at the Casa uneasy. If the Portuguese became aware of the expedition, relations between the two countries might be strained to the breaking point. Yet the Casa's newest member looked at matters quite differently. Juan de Aranda, an ambitious merchant, took the Portuguese navigator aside and offered to lobby on behalf of the expedition in exchange for 20% of the profits. The merchant held out the best hope for keeping the expedition's prospects alive, and so Magellan agreed to cooperate. Aranda wrote enthusiastically on behalf of Magellan, only to be reprimanded by the Casa de Contratación. Worse, Magellan's comrade, Ruy Ferrero, was outraged to hear that Aranda had insinuated himself into the expedition and flew into a tirade so severe that it caused Magellan to back down. There was more to Ferrero's rage than simple indignation. It was a symptom of his growing mental instability. Aranda, for his part, attempted to apologize to Ferrero and contrived to obtain an audience for Magellan with King Charles in the city of Valladolid in north-central Spain. On January 20, 1518, Magellan, along with Ruy Ferrero and Ruy's brother Francisco, set out from Seville for Valladolid. Aranda obtained a meeting for Magellan with the king's Flemish ministers to consider a proposal to assemble an expedition for the Spice Islands, and Magellan came well-armed for what would be the most important meeting of his life. To begin, he offered tantalizing letters from his friend Francisco Serrao, a Portuguese explorer, describing the riches of the Spice Islands. Significantly, Serrao's letters placed the Spice Islands far to the east of their true position. He located them squarely within the Spanish hemisphere, as defined in the Treaty of Tordesillas. This error might have been intentional to disguise the Spice Islands' location from outsiders, but in any event, his geographical legerdemain alleviated Spain's principal anxiety. Magellan's expedition to the Spice Islands must not violate the treaty. To dramatize his mission, Magellan then displayed his slave of long standing, Enrique, who was believed to be a native of the Spice Islands. This was not quite accurate, but in any event, Enrique could act as an interpreter. According to one account, Magellan also brought another slave from the Indies, an attractive female from Sumatra who spoke many languages. After presenting the slaves, Magellan spoke excitedly of his intention to sail along the eastern coast of what is now called South America until the land ended and he would be able to turn west toward the Spice Islands. He invoked the 7 years he had spent in the service of Portugal, administering its empire and flourishing spice trade. And to clinch his argument, he displayed a map displaying the route he planned to take. A crucial part of the map was obscured, however. The part that showed a waterway extending through South America toward the Spice Islands. Although Magellan, in his zeal to persuade the king's ministers to back the expedition, all but gave the strait's location away, he remained fearful that someone would steal his map and his strategy and launch a rival expedition before he could organize his own. Magellan's conception of the world he planned to explore was fatally inaccurate. Like most explorers of the Age of Discovery, his ideas about the size of the globe and location of landmasses were inspired by Ptolemy. Had Magellan comprehended the true size of the Pacific, its currents, storms, and reefs, it is unlikely that he would have dared to mount such an expedition. The estimated length of his route came to only half the actual distance. Magellan confidently predicted that it would take him at most 2 years to reach the Spice Islands and return to Spain with ships bulging with precious cargo. All he would have to do was find a way to get through South America, and he would be at the doorstep of the Indies. This was nearly the same mistake that Columbus had made over and over during his four voyages, and it was a mistake that would be corrected only at the cost of great suffering and of many lives during the voyage Magellan now proposed. After making his presentation to the ministers, Magellan was invited to discuss the proposed expedition in greater detail with Fonseca and Bartolomé de las Casas, a historian and missionary who took part in the meeting. Las Casas remained skeptical of Magellan's belief in the strait. "But suppose you do not find any strait by which you can go into the other sea?" he asked. Magellan told him that if he could not locate the strait, he would go the way the Portuguese took. Although Magellan sounded ready to contravene the terms of the Treaty of Tordesillas, the king and his advisers were too intrigued to turn him away. Immediately after the meetings at Valladolid, the potential co-leaders of the expedition presented a list of demands to the crown. They were couched in respectful language, but they were demands nonetheless. They included an exclusive franchise on the Spice Islands for a full 10 years. This appeared preposterous in a fast-changing world, but Magellan was concerned that Spain would send duplicate expeditions as soon as his was out of sight of land, expeditions guided by his theories and secrets. On March 22, 1518, King Charles offered Magellan and Ferrero a contract regarding the discovery of the Spice Islands. The document was a charter to discover a new world on behalf of Spain. In the first clause, King Charles appeared to accede to Magellan's insistence on a 10-year exclusive. King Charles enjoined Magellan and Ferrero to respect Portugal's territorial rights under the terms of the Treaty of Tordesillas. Charles I had every intention of overtaking the elderly king of Portugal. No matter what the language of the contract seemed to say, the impatient young king wished to bend the terms of the Treaty of Tordesillas to Spain's advantage by insisting that the Spice Islands lay within the Spanish hemisphere. Magellan's expedition need only give Spain a reasonable argument for claiming the Spice Islands. From Magellan's standpoint, this was a remarkable contract because it gave him nearly everything he wanted. From the point of view of Fonseca, the head of the Casa de Contratación, this was hardly an advantageous contract, for it gave Magellan too much power over the expedition. It would take Fonseca months, but eventually he would have his revenge on Magellan and exert the control over the expedition that had been denied him in the royal contract. King Charles promised Magellan 5 ships, equipped with crew, food, artillery, and supplies, for 2 years. The fleet would be called the Armada de Malacca, after the Indonesian name for the Spice Islands. The ships were relatively small, out of necessity. One of Seville's limitations as a port was the shallowness of the Guadalquivir River. Ships had to be sufficiently small and light to negotiate the narrow waterway to the Atlantic. Thus, Magellan's flagship, Trinidad, weighed 100 tons. San Antonio, which carried many of the provisions, weighed 120 tons. Concepcion, 90 tons. Victoria, 85 tons. And Santiago, to be used for reconnaissance, weighed just 75 tons. Although King Charles was supposed to pay for Magellan's ships, according to the contract, he was deeply in debt. To cover the expedition's cost, the Casa de Contratación turned to a familiar presence in financial circles, Cristobal de Haro, who represented the House of Fugger, an influential banking dynasty based in Augsburg, Germany. The House of Fugger had enough money to finance 10 expeditions or more. Indeed, it had more money than King Charles. By bringing in Haro, the king and his advisors would be giving up a significant amount of the profits. Given the hazards of the spice trade and the uncertainty of long ocean voyages, financiers like Haro could be induced to risk their capital on such ventures for only one reason, the lure of extraordinary profits. If successful, or even partly successful, a fleet returning from the Indies could yield a profit of 400%. The more pragmatic Haro estimated that Magellan's expedition could yield a profit of 250%. Meanwhile, he advanced money at an interest rate of 14%. The official accounting of the expedition put the cost at $8,751,125 maravedis, including the 5 ships, provisions, salaries paid out in advance, and fittings for the ships. Magellan's pay came to 50,000 maravedis and an additional 8,000 maravedis each month. By royal order, his monthly salary went directly to his wife, Beatrice. Of the overall cost of the expedition, the king's share came to 6,454,209 maravedis, much of it provided at high interest by Haro. Although royal documents place Haro's contribution to the great enterprise at a modest 1,616,781 maravedis, that number is deceptive. Because his backers, the House of Fugger, also financed expeditions for Portugal, they probably concealed the full extent of their contribution by loaning additional money to the king. In a final piece of official business, King Charles conferred the title of captain on both Magellan and Ferrero. Given the hazards of exploration, it was not unusual for expeditions in the Age of Discovery to have co-captains, but in this case, the arrangement unintentionally sowed the seeds of bitter disputes at sea. Magellan could only have marveled at the speed with which his plan to reach the Spice Islands had come together. King Charles risked Spain's authority and reputation on the expedition, and the backers risked their capital, but Magellan would risk even more. His very life.